Oh, there's so much to do. It's a news quarter me. Oh, it's going to be a quick show today. Quick show. Got a lot to get done. Well, not necessarily quick. It's not going to be an hour-long show today, unfortunately. I started a little bit late here. Been trying to work on some things around here. I have, I had to get the chai ready to go. Got to take the dog over to the vet this morning. So that's going to take a little time. And I'm not sure exactly why the bottom of my cup is now sticking to my napkin. What's going on with that? Must have been a little spillage involved. I have, yes, good morning, folks. Good morning. It is February 23rd, 7:03 a.m. in the morning. And I am up at the show here. I was hoping to get started about 6:30 is what I really thought that's what was going to happen. And then, well, there was a cat involved. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I need to get the dog ready to go over to the vet today. He's got a, you know, he couldn't eat after a certain time last night. So now he's whining and crying. He's used to eating all the time. Now he's not getting his regular morning snacks and all that stuff. The other dog is, and he's kind of, he'll sit there and eat and look at him like, hey, look at me. I'm chewing on stuff over here and you're not. So, no, that's not really the way he acts. He doesn't act that way. He behaves himself. He did eat his snack, but he's got these little chewy pills he eats because of his joints, to help his joints. A couple things I want to talk about today. There's some interesting stuff going on. There was an issue. Boy, it's really how you can look at this and not know what's going on. An interesting death that happened that's tied to the Clintons down in Arkansas. And the findings just came out apparently that there was, because there was an investigation, family wanted an investigation or something. It was ruled a suicide, of course. We'll get into that a little bit if I have time. But it happened last, I think it was last May. It was actually almost been a year since it happened, but it's been, they finally came out with some findings. Anyway, some other things that are happening. One, Kyle Rittenhouse, I guess, is being sued again. Some other things are happening. And Trump, of course, has gone to East Palestine, brought a bunch of water, was giving away water, had it brought in. Current administration, while Biden is off tripping upstairs, going all over the place, passing out our money. Trump is spending his own money to help these people here in East Palestine, Ohio. Pete Buttigieg apparently decided he got confronted by a journalist about whether or not he's going to go there. Well, I've already answered that question 8 times today. I'm not going to answer it again. This is the kind of narcissistic, self-aggrandizing individuals. This guy, because he's a Rhodes Scholar, he thinks he's just so intelligent, he can talk. And he can. I guarantee you, this guy can. He can talk circles around people on the left. He gets away with it all the time. And he is a phony and a fraud, folks. This guy is nothing. He's an empty suit with a bunch of words in it. And unfortunately, he's very good at it. I don't know if any of you have ever known someone who was extremely intelligent and unfortunately knew they were intelligent, and they thought they were the smartest person in the room whenever they went in the room. Oh, they could kind of act humble about it. They would talk to you. But when you realize that they're talking down to you, that's when my little flags go up. I don't mind talking to somebody who's intelligent. I have no problem with that at all. I usually learn something. When I get turned off and tune out is when I can tell that they're talking down to me. And that's what Pete does. He's very crafty with it, though. Oh, he's so sneaky about it. he gets away with this stuff all. He's city of South Bend. Let him get away with this stuff for so long. And now he's doing the same thing in this position he's in. Can you imagine what he would be like if he was the president? There would be nothing but scandal. I mean, it's scandal after scandal. There were scandals that happened in South Bend. He weaseled through them all. I don't know if my recording thing here is working or not. It's doing some kind of weird stuff. I'm not sure what this is going to sound like because it's the recording stream looks like it's kind of hesitating or something weird going on. My computer's been very slow the last couple of days. I think it could be because my cat comes down here and does things. I think he's probably stepping on the keyboard and making things happen. Anyway, Pete says this reporter, journalist is a small operation. Obviously, this lady's asking him questions. Are you going to go to East Palestine? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And finally, at the end of the thing, he says, "Can I take a picture of you?" Pete says this to the reporter. "Can I get your picture? Can I take a picture of you?" What in the world? That's intimidation there, right there. That's which is really creepy that he would do that. So, in fact, one of the weirdest things he said while this was all going on, he said, "Well, I'm taking some personal time right now." No, sir, that's not the way it works. No. When you're out in public, when you're a public figure, when there's a thing like this, you have no personal time. You don't work an 8-hour day, 5 days a week. You don't get 3 months off. You're a public servant, buddy. Sorry. That just comes with the territory. Next thing you know, the National Guard's going to be calling him up. "Oh, I've been called out by the National Guard. They're going to come over to, I've got to go out of the country for a while." Which never happened, by the way. He never left the country. He wasn't called up by the National Guard. This is when there was a scandal going on in South Bend. All of a sudden, he got called out by the National Guard for the Iraq War. It was either Iraq or Afghanistan. Had to leave. "I got to leave. National Guard just called me up." No, come to find out, he volunteered. He opted in on a voluntary mission. And guess what? He never left the country. His position was in an office on the East Coast in Virginia. Yeah. That's Pete Buttigieg for there. That's what that guy's all about. Now, So that's kind of, I'll bring you up to speed there on some of the news. I'm going to talk about currency. I want to talk about currency and money. There was a guy I was listening to this morning, a very interesting feller. And I don't remember his name. I think I have it here somewhere. I'm going to play a couple of videos for you here. Or a couple of audios. I guess I'm going to play the audios for you. Mike Maloney, Maloney is this guy's name. Now, he wrote a book, and the reason I want to show you this. Now, the lady who's interviewing him. Why did that just do that? I didn't want that to happen. Let's go back. Oops, no, didn't want that to happen either. Let's see here. Come on now. That's nice. Now it wants to play. Can't see who this is. Daniela Cambone, actually, is here. Not here. She's, where's it at? Okay. I want to play for you a couple things. To make a point, now I've talked about this before in the past. Now, I want to talk about currency and money because these guys, that's what these people are talking about. But there's a point that I want to make before this. Because this guy makes this point really, really nails it home. And it's been what I've been talking about off and on, about all these people who are writing books. people who are out there just it's like every 6 months they come out with a book. Oh, I just wrote a new book. Brian Kilmeade, that guy's a book writing machine. Now, that guy is busy. That guy is up in the morning on Fox and Friends. He's got a radio show, and he usually makes appearances in the evenings on Fox. He is going all the time, and he also writes articles. And he talks about sports. He helps with the sports part of Fox. There's no way this guy has time to write a book. And I want you to listen to the way this guy who wrote this book, how he talks about how much of his time he invested in this thing and the way he had to structure his life and discipline his life. Basically, everything he was doing was revolved around investing all of his time and effort into this book. And then you got Mike Pence, who, that guy has got to have a busy schedule every day. All of a sudden, he writes a book. Less than a year out of the presidency, he's got a book out there. The vice presidency, sorry. Less than a year out of the White House. All of a sudden, he's got a book. Goes on a book tour. He's probably writing another book even while, this is going on. Now, but I want you to hear this because I think it's very telling, in my opinion, of just how much effort goes into writing a book like this. Let's see if I can get the volume adjusted. Hopefully, I'm gonna bring the volume up just so I don't blast anybody's ears out. I'm just concerned that it's gonna be really noisy. I think this is the book. I think this is the part of the. There's two parts of this that I recorded. One part was about the actual book that he was writing. The other part is about money, currency itself, and the whole digital currency thing. He makes a really good point about digital currency. We'll get into that discussion in a little bit. First, I want to talk about this book thing. So I'm going to play this, and hopefully it won't be too loud. I'm going to bring it up. I'll have the volume down, and I'll bring it up on the fly, as they say. Not that there's a fly running around in my office here, probably, but it's not going to be on that fly. It's going to be on the fly. So here we go. This guy's talking about book writing.
It's been a long time coming for this to finally happen. Welcome to my show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be
Mike
here.
Mike Maloney.
While I was writing the book, I've been turning down all interviews for about the past 3 years. So that's the reason we haven't done this yet, is I couldn't do both those things and get this book done.
I should say, I definitely wasn't taking it personally. I knew you were writing on...
So just to give you an idea here, he's not taking interviews. He's not even doing interviews, a one-hour interview, while he's writing this book because he's devoting all of his time to it. Brian Kilmeade's working 10 to 12, 16 hours a day sometimes and somehow comes out with a book every 6 months. Bill O'Reilly. Now, Bill O'Reilly's got a lot more time on his hands nowadays. He runs a little 20-minute show every day is all he does now. I think he might have a radio broadcast as well, too. But he's got this little short thing he runs. That's about all he does. He also is on Newsmax, I believe. He has a little show on Newsmax for 30 minutes. Now, he might have an hour-long show on there now, actually. But he was, he's always writing books all the time. Killing Lincoln, Killing This, Killing That. With this whole series on stuff. The point is, if you're writing a book, now this guy's got a team of people. It's three or four people that are helping him with this. Now he's doing the lion's share of the work. But let's continue on here and listen to what he has to say about this.
Book, and I told him I need to have, the first interview when it comes out. And we're going to talk about various topics your book covers, because I read it, I crammed it all in with great interest, and I actually want to go back and reread it when I have more time. But you wrote your first book in 2008, correct?
It came out in 2008. I started researching for that book in about 2002.
Six years.
I think I came up with the table of contents for it in 2003.
It took him a year to come out with contents.
It was written in 2005, 6, and 7.
3 years.
The writing and editing, and then came out in 2008. People do not realize how much work a book is.
Thank you.
Well, this is a labor of love. I mean, how many years have you been working on this book?
I actually started it a decade ago. And I worked on it
10
off and on.
Years.
Then became very serious and started working on it much more intensely in 2018 and 19. In 2020, when the COVID crash happened, the pandemic plunge, I thought it was all over with, that was the popping of the bubble, that I had missed it and that I had wasted a couple of years of my life. And so I didn't write the rest, once that crash happened, for the rest of 2020, I didn't write it. So I picked it back up 2021, 2022. I worked very intensely on it, trying to get it out before a potential crash, the market correcting from the warping and distorting of the economy that the Federal Reserve has done. Then we ran into the problem of supply chain issues. The printer couldn't get paper, and then the printer couldn't get cardboard to put the, if he did print the books, he wouldn't be able to have boxes to put them in. I was trying to write.
That's it goes on to talk about more of the logistical side of things too, as well. So that was kind of one of those issues. But now he also, we'll get into more of this thing about the cryptocurrency and the digital currency, the surveillance currency that is also out there. That's on the horizon. Probably this, some experts are saying by the end of this year, some are saying by the end of next year. I'm thinking it could be very easily, I could very easily see it happening this year. Now, the reason is because of the success that the Democrats have had with creating a crisis. Their propensity to do that again is, they're typically, they're very good at repeating what they've done in the past. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pull that playbook out again. That they pulled out in 2020. But we'll see. We'll see how, I think, because 2022 they did it too. But the 2020 was the big one. Now, this guy's whole point is writing a book. Now, it actually was very inspiring for me to hear this, because it has been probably 12 years I've been trying to put together a book myself. And in fact, the idea for this book, I would have to say, started in the 1980s. Like 40 years ago. And the problem with writing it, and I think he was running into this as well. He knew that he had to get it written and get it done and get it all researched, because the thing that he was predicting, the thing that he was talking about, could potentially happen while he was writing the book. And that's where I'm kind of at with this situation I'm in with trying to write this book. Now, I've got a lot of notes. I finally started digitizing all this stuff. That way I can carry it with me. I can see it on my phone. I can see it on my iPad. I can see it on my computer. And I can actually write. I got a little Apple Pen, so I can write on my iPad. And so it's much easier to have it at the ready, so to speak. And I can also type into it if I want to do that as well. So the interesting thing of that is, all these notes that I've combined and put together and collaged. The problem is, as things unfold, they're almost unfolding faster than I can write. So it's one of those weird dilemmas where I'm trying to get this stuff out. Now, one of the other things that I'm just going to talk about writing in books in general. If you're an aspiring writer, if you're thinking about writing a book about something. If you've written something, maybe you're a speaker, maybe you've done some speaking, or you've got some notes, some studies that you've done, whatever it is that you've done, topics that you're interested in, I would encourage you, challenge you to publish those things in some way, shape, or manner. I also subscribe on YouTube to a couple of book writing channels on how to write books, inspiration for writing books and motivational type things that are, they try to help you just get out there and start writing and, how to go from writing a book and, how to write a book in a day kind of thing, crazy stuff like that. Create a course, an online course, that kind of thing. I have some subscriptions to some of those kinds of things. And one guy, he had a short on YouTube, which is a short is just a thing where it's like it has to be less than so many minutes or whatever, but it's just a quick little video. You click on it, you can actually be watching one video and you click on the short and it pops up and it'll play the short and then it goes back to the other video. And at least on the phone it does. The interesting thing was he said, if you just write one page of something, just write it. Get it from start to finish, write that one page and get it out there. Publish it somehow. Post it on an internet site somewhere. Do something with it. get that ball rolling, get that completion of that one thing done, and then move on. Maybe it's an extension of the last thing you did, of that one page, but you're setting that wheel into motion, which I think is very critical with regard to motivation and inspiration. I think it's a really kind of a critical thing for most people, and that's where I get stuck. And I feel like I'm in a quagmire. I'm not able to get beyond that point of this just a mountain of things to do. I can't get beyond that. I think that, and I've found a path, I guess you will, if you will, to from point A to point B. I can kind of clearly see a path now, how I can execute this thing and get this book done. And that's, you know, in the midst of everything else I'm doing right now, that is one thing I'm going to try to get accomplished. Now, at the same time, I have been for a long time being encouraged from all sides in many different ways. I can't even explain to you all the different ways that I'm being encouraged to do this, to record another album. And this is going to be a worship music album. And I've actually just recently figured out how that's going to work. I've struggled with, you know, I can usually write the music fine. I can do great with the music, putting chords together, music lines, melody lines, all that kind of stuff. I can do that. It's the words that I struggle with. Now, I did a project a while back, it was several years ago. It was a deal where this guy had written a bunch of songs, but he wasn't a musician. He didn't know how to put the music to it. But he'd written basically a series of almost like poems, but he knew that there were lyrics to a song. Now, they weren't laid out in a way that you could put them into a musical frame. However, it was to the point, you know, I could put the gist of it together. So that we collaborated on this project, and I basically put the words to music for him. Had about 8 songs, I think. And so I did the musical part of it, and we changed a few lines here and there just to kind of make things fit with the music and create choruses and that kind of stuff. So, and that worked out pretty well, actually. It gained some traction in some areas. It's kind of interesting, but it taught me something. It taught me a lot about, first of all, the way I am and the way it works. And now this album that I'm going to put out, this is all going to be pretty much a work that I'm doing. I'm going to get some professionals involved at some point. There's actually 2 projects, musical projects, I'm working on right now. One of them is going to just involve professionals right off the bat. I'm going to have to go to Sweetwater, which is down in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I've already talked to them about this. It's probably something I'm going to have to do in just a couple of days, and then I'm gonna pay them to put some things together and put the, you know, the sparkle on it, make it sound, you know, audibly, you know, acceptable, so you're not trying to vomit when you try to listen to it. But then I'm gonna probably try to put this other project together. It's gonna take a little bit more time. It's gonna be a few months before it comes out. However, I really think it's gonna fall together a lot quicker than I think. Maybe because I really did have a total vision of how this thing should go together in terms of the worship album. Now the book itself, the book I'm talking about is I just need to start spending an hour a day typing. What I need to do, and that's, of course, it would be easy for me to find an hour. The problem is I tend to waste time all the time, you know, listening to videos and making podcasts. So that's what I'm doing. So having said enough about that stuff, what I'm saying is that all this stuff takes an investment of time, and you can't just be out doing interviews, making speeches, and then all of a sudden, hey, by the way, I just tripped over this thing and created a book. Here's my book. I'm going to go on a book tour now for 2 weeks, and then I'm going to sell all these books, and then I'm going to write another book. Yeah, well, look, while I was out there selling this book, I wrote another book. Now, people like Clancy and, you know, the great writers of novels and that kind of thing, these people hide away for years while they're writing stuff like this. You don't see them out in public very much at all. They're busy. They're busy 24 hours a day. They're writing. They're consumed by these things. That's not what you're seeing when you're looking at people like Pence and all these other people who are out there writing books all the time. They have busy lives. They're on television, radio, everything else, and all of a sudden a book pops up. Now, my point is, ghost writers. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what I'm trying to tell you here. It's obvious that they are not writing a book. And it's, I guess to me, that seems a little bit disingenuous and a little bit fake and phony. The majority of the content in these books are not researched. It's just word salad. It's the same thing you would get if you're listening to them for an hour or two on the radio. Just a whole lot of fluff. And that's where I tend to be a little bit more cynical, I guess, about some of this stuff. I was talking to a friend of mine. We're just a couple crotchety old guys now. Get off my lawn. Who's turning all these lights on in the house? I got to turn these off all the time. Yeah. That's what we're turning into. But, and I think life, you know, as you go through life and you see that there's nothing, I think Solomon might have said, there's nothing new under the sun. All these people think that they're somehow we have evolved now into a higher society. We're going to create a greater society of more awoke nation. Everyone being more equal and everyone having a equal outcome and equity, kind of, not just equality but equity. Because, you know, I heard an interesting thing this morning. It was by a dark skinned man. We'll just call him that. It's actually BCP, Black Conservative Patriot. His name is James. He was talking a little bit this morning. I'll give him credit for this. He came up with this thought, and I thought it was very interesting. You know, the same crowd that's out there saying, well, you know, people who are gay, they were just born that way. It's not a choice. They were just born that way. You need to let them, you know, let them live their life the way they are and just let them be. You need to accept them for what they are. They defend them, you know, saying this stuff. Okay. Are we going to apply that same principle to someone who obviously was born with a particular skin color? Well, if you're born white, you're a racist. That's automatic. Can't do anything about that because you're white. I didn't choose to be white. I just popped out this way. But that automatically makes me racist. And there's nothing I can do to change that. According to them. Yeah. Okay. Makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it? but a black person can stand in the street and yell, I hate white people, and they're not racist. They get excused for that. Because of the white man. Because the white man oppressed them and caused them to say that. The crime rate is so, it's just, yeah, okay, I'm done with that. Let's go on with the money issue. The money issue. Where this guy makes the point again, and I wanted to play this for you because I want you to hear this for what it is and understand that this is really, I think he kind of spells it out in a way that's, I think, probably a little bit more clear than what I can make it. But I don't want just to come out of my mouth. I want you to hear this from somebody. Now, I've heard several individuals, financial money people, talk about this. This guy in this book, he makes a very good distinction between, I haven't read the book, but he does a really good job of canonizing it. The interesting part about this is he talks about the difference between currency, which is the fiat currency that we have. It's paper. It's not based on anything other than really the only thing that at the bottom line is the only thing that really makes it worth anything is that you can pay your taxes with it. And that's what creates this network of people who are willing to trade it for services and goods. If you couldn't pay your taxes with it, as a nation, as a people, as a people group, in terms of the society we're in, not talking about world economic trade or anything. I'm just talking about day to day, commerce. It would fall apart very quickly. Because you could do other things. You could barter and trade, and you could find other things to be worth things. This guy's really big on gold. The majority of his investments are in gold. Now, I have a problem with that. Not because I don't think that gold will be a good investment. Don't get me wrong. I think that gold is a better investment than paper money right now. But at the same time, I don't think that you can trust any of that. How are you going to exchange? What are you going to exchange your gold for? And how are you going to exchange that? Are people, when there's a famine and food is scarce, do you think that someone, there's this, it's the words of a couple songs, and I know that, I think that was actually, I'm not sure if this is in scripture or not, I believe it is. But I don't want to say that it is. It might just be in somebody's writings. A bag of gold can't buy a loaf of bread. They're talking about famine. And even if you had a bag of gold, it wouldn't buy you a loaf of bread because there's no bread to be bought. Anything that you have, whether it's gold, crypto, paper money, silver, crab claws, whatever it is that you've got that you want to trade on the market, it's only worth something if people are willing to trade it. I would contend that you may want to put up some of your investments in things that have intrinsic value beyond gold. What are you going to do with gold? Oh, gold is, it's being used in all the markets. Silver is being used in all this stuff. Are you building cell phones? Are you building electronics? Are you building stuff for the space industry? Are you actually physically using gold? Do you have a machine out in your backyard that you're doing something with gold that makes products that people are willing to buy? You simply have gold to trade with. And what are you trading it for? Probably food. A house payment, maybe. Good luck with that. Gas for your car. I'm going to go downtown to the gas station, and I'm going to put this gold in the little machine out there, and I'm going to wave it under the scanner thing and let them know I've got some. I'm going to shave a little bit off there for you. My knife. There you go. There's what? 3 shavings for a gallon. But whatever, that's not going to work. And of course, you don't want to buy paper gold. You want to buy the actual, because they monetize that stuff too. They fractional trade it. They don't actually have, they'll have 10 pounds of gold and they'll sell 100 of it, 100 pounds of gold. So you want to have physical gold. What are you going to do with it? Are you hungry? Go over there and take a bite out of it. See how that works out for you. My point is, you may want to consider having some food stored up someplace. That's probably going to be worth more than anything else you've got. Getting things paid off. Now, I happen to know that taxes are going to, that's another whole other issue. I basically pay about $300 a month to call this house my home. I'm not talking about the bank. I'm talking about taxes, property taxes. My first apartment didn't even cost me $300 a month. I'm renting the privilege of calling this house, this land, my own. If I don't pay, you don't think so. So if I don't pay it, guess who takes it back? Guess who takes it away from me? The state. So who really owns this land? The state. I'm renting this land from them. I'm a conscription. So that's the problem we have right now with this whole property tax issue. Now, I may be moving. If I do move, I'm really seriously looking at moving to a state that has no property tax. I talked about getting rid of it here in Indiana one time. And the Democrats bamboozled the Republicans. They compromised. The Republicans wanted to get rid of the property tax and go to a straight sales tax. They're going to raise, the sales tax is going to be way too high. Well, people aren't going to pay that. It wouldn't have been anything more out of our pockets than there already was. The budget for Indiana would have stayed the same. There wouldn't have been any more money. They were making the argument, this is going to really put the burden on people. No, the problem is it puts the burden on everybody. Regardless of what you own, now everybody is paying in. Every time they purchase something, they're paying something in. You're all getting the benefit, not just property owners. Now, every time you spend your money, you're helping to pay for some things in here in Indiana. Even if you're from out of state. But here's what they did. They wanted to raise the sales tax to, I think it was 9% at the time. The sales tax at the time was 4%. So they wanted to raise it to 9% and completely get rid of the property tax, state property tax. So the Democrats made a compromise. Well, here's what we'll do. We'll just raise it half as much, but we'll put a cap on property tax for your home dwellings. Not commercial properties aren't going to be capped. Or if you own more than one property, just your first property where you live, your residential home will be capped. So that's what they did. They raised it to 7%. So we have 7% sales tax here in Indiana now. Went up 3 cents on the dollar. And they capped your residential property tax. But here's the dirty little secret, what they did. Then they came out, all of a sudden they came back around. The next year they came out to reassess your home value, and guess what happened? It went up. All of a sudden your property's worth more now. And they really socked it to people who had commercial properties. In some cases, they almost doubled the value of their commercial property overnight. Nice. That was nice. So now we get the worst of both worlds. Thanks, Republicans, for not staying holding a line on that one. For the compromise you did. Oh, look, we got something done. No, yeah, you got our taxes raised, period. That was it. Paying more in sales tax? And we're paying more, or just as much, in property tax. Yeah, that worked out really well. So, in the meantime, the other thing we have going on is we have, now that the Republicans in the House, in the federal level, are talking about a national sales tax and getting rid of the income tax. Now, I think what you would find in the federal level is you'd find that there would be a huge increase in the amount of money and the amount of revenue coming in. And you could still make things exempt from federal sales tax. You could like milk and eggs and bread, whatever. There are things you could exempt from that. You know, basic, the things that aren't in core inflation, by the way. How about that? How about you just tax the things that are core inflation? Part of the core economics. Or don't tax those things. Don't tax core economics. Whatever you want to do. They want to play that game, we'll play it right back. Democrats are flipping out about this idea of not having income tax, which just blows my mind. These used to be the liberals, the ones who wanted it. They love tax. I don't know why. I don't understand why they, but they want the government just pay for everything. Well, in that case, you have to make the government, you have to tax you for everything. No, you don't. It's the same issue. If they just monetize the whole thing, it's the same thing. They're still taking the value of your dollar. It's just that it's delayed. That's what we don't understand in this country. This guy with this book, he explains this pretty well. It's Mike Maloney guy. There's a difference between currency, which is just based on thin air, borrowing against borrowing. It's about borrowing against you and your future worth. And money, money which has an intrinsic value. You can take a gold coin, melt it down, and it still has value. You can take a dollar bill and grind it up into pulp. Good luck getting anything for that. Or you can light a match to it. Light a match to a gold coin and see how long that lasts. Light a match to a dollar bill and see how long that lasts. Or a $100 bill. It'll still have the same BTUs, by the way. You get the same, if you have 100 $1 bills and 100 $100 bills, you'll get the same number of BTUs out of that in case you're trying to heat your home with it. Just so you know, you might want to cash those into, you might want to go to the bank and get some ones for your hundreds because that way you get a few more BTUs out of it. But that's really what it's worth. If you want to look at it that way, that's the intrinsic value it has. Now, this guy, I want to play this really quick because I really need to go, but I'm going to play this audio. He talks about this, and it's, I think it's very critical that we understand this point because most people do not get this, and I think it's really critical. He really makes it very clear as to what a surveillance currency is and where we're going with this digital, this government digital currency. They're going to try to call it a cryptocurrency. We're going to come up with our own digital currency. No, you're confusing people with digital currency and cryptocurrency are two different things. But let's go into this and see what he says here.
How far away are we from that reality and your thoughts on central bank digital currencies?
Central bank digital currencies.
I don't know, 1-2 years, something like that. I actually hope they're a little bit late so that the crisis comes before then, because this would be the method for them to get everybody into it, and then you're trapped.
Okay, now notice he says you're trapped. Now, I just want you to know, I do have this set on 1.25 times. It's a quarter, it's 25% faster than normal. So just guys talking kind of fast.
We're all using central bank digital currencies. That, you know, right now, they inflate the currency supply and they transfer wealth. But if they scare people too much, you can go into other assets. Well, once they've got central bank digital currency, if they don't want you to buy gold, they just won't allow you. The currency won't buy it. The currency is programmable. They can control almost every aspect of your life once we get on any programmable currency, where they can, if they don't like you, they can make it so that you can't spend any currency within a 5-mile radius, you know, outside of a 5-mile radius of your home. If they don't want you to travel, you won't be able to buy airline tickets or take an Uber or pay for a hotel room.
Scary stuff. That's
once
scary.
They get you into this, now, I should have prepared and had this little bill, but in Taiwan, they came out with a note that was a temporary note to stimulate the economy. They printed a whole bunch of currency that had an expiration date on it. And so as it starts reaching its expiration date, nobody wants to hold it. Velocity picks up, but the value of its purchasing power diminishes. They can do, if they think they need to stimulate the economy, what they can do is punish you by charging you 10% on your savings. And if you notice your savings vanishing at this amazing rate, you're going to spend it before it vanishes. So they can cause, you know, this is the one area that the Federal Reserve and the currency creators, they don't have direct control over it. That's the emotion of the public is what controls velocity, whether or not you feel good enough to go out and spend. So if they want you to go out and spend, they'll just punish you if you don't.
So that's the scary part, in my opinion, of the whole digital currency thing. And they're going to push it. And I believe they're going to escalate. Something is going to happen. They're going to bring this currency into place to fix a problem. They always create a problem and then they always have the answer to it. Same people who created the problem are the ones who want to fix it for you. And I believe that's where we're headed with this whole thing. I think that is absolutely where we are headed with the digital currency. And in order for the general public to accept it, there's going to have to be something like a pandemic I think if they would have been prepared for it, they were so, you know, just they were acting out of rage for one particular Donald Trump, trying to get him out of office. That's all they were thinking about. They weren't thinking about how they were going to implant this new currency in place. But I think that the next crisis, which they're, you know, they're just salivating over the next time they get to do this again, they're going to have it all. They're going to have their ducks in a row. These same people, these same elitists are in place now to do this stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Gates is behind it all, is behind a lot of it. You know, him and his buddies, George, and all the Rothschilds and all the other people that are involved in this stuff. It's just amazing. We talk about conspiracies and all that. Oh, you're just one of those QAnon guys. No, I'm not a QAnon guy. I'm just saying there are people at the top of this piggy pile that think that they have all the answers and they want to be the societal engineers and fix the public and create a society where everyone is happy. But they own nothing. They own nothing, but you will be happy. I came out right out and said that. Just blows my mind. Well, folks, tomorrow is a live show. And like I said, it may be later in the morning because I have an actual appointment over in another town kind of early in the morning. So it's either going to be really early show that's live, or it's going to be, which I don't think that's going to happen, because I've got to be out the door by 7 o'clock. So I think that it's probably going to be a little bit later in the day, I'm guessing. Probably closer to 11 o'clock or maybe even noon before I get the live show spun up and going. But in any case, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, passing it on, sharing. And again, reasons to pray for our country. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our nation. Pray for those in East Palestine, Ohio. God bless, folks. Have a great day. Rest of your week.